You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 333, A Tale of Our Times, the new editor of the Gay Times appointed, and then sacked within 2 weeks following the discovery of his Twitter history, the ongoing exploitation of football fans, and we open the doors of Zoella's 50 quid 12-door advent calendar. Whew, wait to hear about the contents. It's all coming up after the Ramones and Blitzkrieg Bop.
I remember going to see the Ramones in London at the dawn of punk in 1977, and they were sensationally loud, but my strongest memory is of them playing a set of about 20 songs in about 45 minutes. Just as one song crashed to a halt, Dee Dee Ramone would shout, 1, 2, 3, 4, and off they went again. From their debut album in 1976, the Ramones and Blitzkrieg Bop.
Which my dad once confused with Ballroom Blitz by the Sweet.
Easily done.
Fact fans, yes, indeed.
Easily done. Welcome to the podcast from the Parish Council. It's episode 333, 333. It's enormous fun to say that, actually. 333.
Oh, 333, as my Irish ex-girlfriend would have said.
Indeed, very much so. I'm Terence Stackham, and 1, 2, 3, 4, it's Juliet Harris.
Hello, that's me, Juliet Ramone. Hello, hope you're well, everyone.
Jules, I think all these, all the three topics we have this week could be enveloped in the same description of Tales of Our Times.
Modern life is rubbish, yeah.
Leading the way is the story of 31-year-old Josh Rivers, who must have thought his career in the media was on the up and up after he was appointed editor of the popular monthly magazine here in the UK, Gay Times. Indeed, his Twitter account confirms his joy. On October the 27th, he tweeted, "Delighted to announce I've been promoted to editor of Gay Times." But it was Twitter that was to be his downfall. Conducting some research prior to interviewing Rivers, BuzzFeed uncovered a catalogue of tweets from Josh Rivers in which he manages to, in under 140 characters, to say the most appalling things, I'm not going to quote them here, about lesbians, overweight people, Asian, Chinese people, Jewish people, women in general, essentially all of human life. Josh Rivers managed to tweet something awful about all of us. Earlier this week, he was suspended by Gay Times, and then his sacking was announced on Thursday. Now, Jules, Rivers says that all of these tweets are in the past and don't reflect the man he is now. Do you have any sympathy for Mr. Rivers?
Well, I mean, it's difficult to, isn't it, really? And
it
I have
is.
To say, your summary of the people that he slagged off is only better by the Daily Mail. Now, as regular listeners know, I'm not an enthusiast about the workings of the Daily Mail. But, however, I very much enjoyed this headline. Gay Times' new editor is sacked over tweets slamming Jews, lesbians, straight women, Egyptians, Asians, Chinese, transgender people, fat people, mothers, and, worst of all, bus drivers.
Oh, bus drivers.
First they came for the bus drivers, and I did not speak out, etc. I have real difficulties with this, and actually, interestingly, and I'm gonna have to tread carefully about how I'm describing this, but as a gay woman, I've occasionally been involved in sort of organizations of gay people, and particularly politically, LGBT Labour, that sort of thing, and I used to get quite frustrated about how some of these organizations were dominated by white middle-class, upper-class gay men. Now, Josh Rivers appears to be mixed race. He's not a white chap. But I always found that gay men were surprisingly tin-eared when it came to the rights of other minorities, particularly women, usually. And there has been this kind of, you know, obviously this huge uproar in Parliament recently about sort of reviewing how men treat women, the kind of language that is used. There was an interesting kind of offshoot. There was a miners' storm involving Clive Lewis, the ethnic minority Labour MP, who was accused of having called some, using the phrase "get on your knees" and then the phrase "you're a female dog" to somebody. And it was then excused by saying, it was campy humour, because often sort of camp gay men humour and camp drag queen humour involves, you know, frequent use of this word, which is actually in a way denigrating women. So I you know, I have views on to what extent sort of gay male culture is based upon the denigration of other minorities anyway, really. And so that's partly my kind of, I'm not terribly surprised that this is that Josh Rivers has got to where he has. Yes, we all say daft things in the past. I've said things even on this podcast that I probably wouldn't say again. No, I am sorry again for calling Michael Gove a haunted friend and a Chris dummy. I would not say that, and it was a terrible, I was thinking about it the other day, it was a very unkind thing to say, and I wish I hadn't said it. We all make mistakes. But having said that, and again, this is my similarity with Jared O'Mara. I mean, this chap made these statements between 2010 and 2015. He's 31, so he's 2 years younger than me, which means, working on the basis that he's 31 in 2017, I'm showing my working here, so he was born in 1986. If this was in 2010, 2015, he was 24 to 29 years old. He wasn't a teenager. He was an adult, presumably with a job, paying tax and voting and having adult responsibilities. We all grow as people and we all regret things, but I find the volume of stuff that he said difficult. The range of people of which he said it about difficult. It might be one thing if, you know, I'm trying to think of a circumstance in which, you know, discrimination against one group of people is okay, and I don't think it is. But it was a huge range of terrible things that he said. And also, the whole kind of I'm on a journey narrative. There are so many people on journeys at the moment. You know, who knows, maybe they'll get some sort of group rate. But I just find it so... I found his apology to be very mannered, and when BuzzFeed rung him up about it and spoke to him, he's kind of, you know, he kept saying, oh, wow, I can't believe I said that, when he said all these tweets, over a five-year period. It wasn't a short period of time. It wasn't a three-month period during which he might have had a difficult point in his life, which still isn't okay, but, you know, you might have been able to understand that. And he's kind of this whole, oh, I'm on a journey, and it shows how much I've grown. I think, in a way, and I find an element of hipsterness about this, and I think we've wandered into hipster world on the podcast previously, but I think that, in a way, because of, you know, this idea, this modern phenomenon of quote unquote being woke and kind of young people sort of knowing that and that sort of thing, I wonder if this is taken on the same kind of way, use, and the same kind of characteristics as cereal cafes and avocado on toast and that sort of thing, that it becomes a language that one learns and the behaviours that one adopts, so one realises if one wants to be cool, if one wants to be of the zeitgeist, if one wants to be modern, then you say, oh, you know, I'm a trans, I'm a you know, trans rights supporting intergenerational, you know, intersectional feminist. I mean, you know, I am, lots of people genuinely are. But I do worry that people who I do not think are high caliber individuals now have a whole new set of language that they can teach themselves and learn in order to A, appear contrite, and B, appear woke. And I was not convinced by Mr. Rivers' apology at all. I thought it struck me as someone that had taught themselves how to apologise and how to be inclusive using a phrase book rather than someone that actually was.
I also find it amazing how often these scenarios keep recurring. Quite astonishing that we have organisations and companies who appoint people to senior positions, clearly without conducting the most cursory of checks. All of these tweets were in plain sight on his Twitter feed, BuzzFeed found out. And it's, 6 or 7 years ago since the Johan Hari debacle, but still the lessons of simple checks haven't been learned. And I was thinking perhaps Trump has made it acceptable to simply say the most audacious or dreadful things and then just bluster on. Boris Johnson, of course, is the UK's master of this sort of behaviour.
Absolutely. But I suppose that the situation, the way in which the situation is different here is that Gay Times is, of course, a publication forwarding the cause of a minority. And I mean that as someone that occasionally reads it, although I have to say, And it was interesting that there was talk of, they'd hope that he would expand it to include more coverage of lesbian issues, because, of course, I seldom read Gay Times because it just never feels relevant to me. And the way that his editorial sort of ship had been talked up was, it's going to include more minorities and it's going to be so embracing of minorities, which was why he had to go as soon as they found out, because it was so at odds with that. But the interesting thing you say about in sort of organisations not doing due diligence, it's interesting that organisations and people applying for jobs neither seem to have caught up with the idea. And when Jared O'Mara, the Labour MP, had the whip taken away, there was talk about whether or not this is the first generation of people that are perhaps are entering public life who have had an online life before they've had a public life. And actually, it's interesting, everyone's now got to catch up with that fact. And like you say, it seems like organisations like Gay Times haven't caught up with the idea. You know, maybe it's a good idea to check someone's social media.
Well, exactly. And also on the other side, the big lesson for all people looking for a high profile career, go back and check
what you say. Absolutely.
Check every tweet you've ever posted, everything you've ever put on Facebook, and have your finger poised over the delete button, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
Football continues to pick the pockets of the most loyal supporters. That's next after this sparkling track from Keen.
Did you wanna be an icon? Did you want to be famous? Did you want to be the president? Did you want to start a war? Did you want to have a family? Did you want to be in love? Did you want to be in love? When we fall in love, we're just falling in love with ourselves. We're spiraling. We're tumbling down. We're spiraling. Tied up to the ground. We're
Now, I really like that. It was rather unexpected. Keane, known as a kind of a fairly prosaic sort of drums, bass, piano outfit, their previous claim to fame was that they had no guitarist. Now, of course, when I say now, when that album came out and that was the sort of lead-off track from that, really, you know, everyone was rather surprised by Keane suddenly becoming a sort of a synth-pop band. But I think that is rather marvellous, I must admit. That is Keane and that's Spiralling.
I was surprised to check that Spiralling only made it to number 23 on the singles chart.
Yes, I'm surprised.
It was never off the radio in the sort of late summer of 2008. No. So I thought it was a bigger hit than it was. But yes, great single, great. Jules, when we watch the big football games on the television, the atmosphere in the stadium is in the hands and voices, of course, of the anything from 40,000 to 100,000 fans in the stadium. What's easy to forget is that each of these individuals making up the crowd has his or her own story, and that there's a fascinating 6-minute documentary published by Your Guardian this week highlighting the journeys and sacrifices people have to make, particularly to attend away games. And the documentary highlighted three difficult journeys fans have made in recent weeks. I was particularly taken by the people who had to leave Newcastle on a coach at, I think it was 5 a.m. in the morning to reach Brighton for an afternoon, I think a 2 p.m. kickoff. Many clubs exploit this sort of passion, and my own club Chelsea does this, by insisting that fans must go to the less attractive games in order to accrue loyalty points, like in a supermarket, that in turn then allow you to apply for tickets for the biggest games, say Premiership games against Man U or Spurs or Cup Final tickets, so on. One of the worst aspects shown in the film is that the broadcasters only have to give 6 weeks' notice to change the date and time of matches. So these most passionate supporters can't plan ahead. If we add in the cost of travel to the extraordinarily high ticket prices at the top clubs, this doesn't make any sort of sense if you're looking for value for money, Jules.
No, I agree. And it's a theme that we often seem to return to on this podcast. And we do try to, listeners will hopefully will be aware that we do try to avoid talking about the same things all the time. But it says a lot about modern life that many of the problems seem to come from the same root. Mm. And many of the issues seem to share the same sort of difficulties. And everything in football, the kind of domination of money in football is, again, something that comes up all the time. But I enjoyed this I enjoyed watching it because it showed the human cost of that. And it's easy for us to talk about in the abstract old people being prized out of football, but this showed genuinely that people are, and I find it so frustrating. You mean the counter argument is, oh well, no one's making these fans go to these games, it's their choice to do so. And if you're like saying yes, but their choice is so limited by, like you say, this idea that people, that broadcasters only have to give 6 weeks notice. I think I've moaned about stupid kickoff times before, and it makes me so angry. And I think ultimately it's quite short-sighted by the football organisers as well, that and we've talked again about cricket tournaments with half-empty stadiums on TV.
Very much, yeah.
So football kickoffs, they configure them around the idea that people might want to watch them on television, which is why you end up with sort of 6 p.m. on a Sunday kickoffs, or ridiculously stupid things, or, you know, like you say, 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon when people have got to travel the length of the country to go and watch their team play, which means that people are less able to do so, which then means, guess what, guys, we've got football stadiums that are half empty being shown on television. So I think ultimately it will prove to be self-defeating for the organisers. But no, I have every sympathy with fans. You know, why should, you know, yes, it's my choice to go and watch football, but why should it be made absolutely ineffably difficult for me to do so if, you know, if we then have a situation whereby people can't afford to go, and we then if people stop going, and there's less income. If people stop going to watch football, then there is, you know, perhaps a marginal dip in income from ticket sales. But if people, that will have a knock-on effect eventually, because if people stop going, then people will stop watching on TV because there'll be no atmosphere, and then that's when the money comes crashing down, and people wonder why football might not be profitable anymore. It makes me really cross. Though I did have a grin at this tweet by a parody. So Twitter is full of parody accounts, and they seem to get more bizarre as time goes on. There's a Royal Kingsley account, which is the unofficial mascot to Reading FC. Oh. So it's a parody account, and his has a long list of the cost of families being priced out of football, but it's a bit of a spoof. So you start off with £5 for the train and £25 for the ticket. We then go on to £30 for pre-match shots, £60 for cocaine, £10 for taxi to the ground, £10 of beers, £10 to a taxi to town at half time, £80 for post-match beers, £25 for a curry, £40 for what he refers to as crystal MDMA, £5 for something called After Dark, £6 for a doner kebab, bracket large, close brackets, and £30 for a taxi home. Total £336. Is it any wonder families are being priced out of football, says the unofficial Reading mascot account.
Of course, if the cycle of worship for the Premier League ever pedals away in the opposite direction,
yes, quite, yeah,
then the broadcast will have they'll have no loyalty to British football. They'll be over the horizon and
the next thing, won't it?
They'll be screeching about the wonders of the Chinese League or the Intergalactic Champions Trophy or whatever,
or Tiddlywinks Death Match or whatever the next sport's going
to
be.
To a degree, I don't think broadcasters really. I agree that the atmosphere in the ground is important, but I was thinking about this. I think this could be the future. Many clubs already create a false atmosphere by pumping crowd noise through the PA system. It's probably only a matter of time before TV companies fill any gaps in the crowd with CGI supporters, you know, computer-generated fans to fill. You know, like those people who have to sit in the seats at the Oscars when celebrities go to the bathroom. So they just fill it either with people that they pay £5 to just sit in the seats, or they just computer generate them. But there was an interesting report by the BBC this week, linked to what we're talking about, that the cost of tickets is keeping young people away from football. 82% of people, young people asked in this report, said that cost was an obstacle to them going to matches. And from the stats, I discovered actually a couple of fascinating pieces of economic news. And we featured Huddersfield recently when we talked about their local newspaper. And I found this week in this report that I found this extraordinary. It's possible to buy a season ticket at Huddersfield in the Premier League to see all the home games for £100.
Wow, so that's just really good.
That's just over £5 a game. And perhaps surprisingly, second cheapest season tickets are at West Ham, which I didn't expect, £289 a year.
Yeah.
Good value, except, of course, you'd be watching West Ham. Of course, that's the downside.
Harsh affair. But you would be in the Olympic Stadium, Terence.
You would be. I think the truth is, in terms of the inconvenience of getting to games and the astronomical cost of doing so, as long as people are loyal, in inverted commas, enough to go through it all, clubs and the TV companies will just carry on exploiting that loyalty.
It's true, and that's sad, and it makes me cross.
It's nearly 2 years now since Jules and I looked at the world of YouTuber Zoella.
Yes, indeed. Wow, time flies when you're having fun.
But she's back. That's next after Patti Smith. From the album Wave, splendidly produced by Todd Rundgren. A cover of the Birdsong from the 1960s, Patti Smith, and So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star.
Queen Patti Smith forever, frankly. Long may she reign.
Indeed. If only I could get that image I have of when I saw her live in the 70s at the Roundhouse, when she spent most of the gig spitting
I've seen Patti Smith a bit before. It's just a rite of passage. I love Frederick from that album.
Me too. Frederick Dancing Barefoot, yeah. Frederick, that was the lead single off it, I think, wasn't it? About her soon-to-be husband, Fred Sonic Smith, I think.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Jules, the last time that we were saying that the YouTuber Zoella entered our lives on this podcast, nearly 2 years ago, when we mused upon the generation gap after a news story appeared as Zoella failed to recognise David Gilmour on a beach. She posted a photo that she captioned, "A random man and his dog." Zoella makes her return to the parish council this week. Actually, I'm something of an expert on advent calendars. Each year, I trawl through Amazon looking for advent calendars to send to my nephew and niece.
Oh, right, OK, yeah.
The fact that they are now 25 and 21, respectively, doesn't stop me in my quest.
Well, you are a gentleman and a scholar, that is why.
I wonder if they sit there and go, oh, no, it's the advent
calendar. Not another one, absolutely, yeah.
Each year, despite all my trawling, I always end up sending them the Lint, L-I-N-D-T, the advent calendar. Now,
That's a solid choice. I'd be pleased. I'll look forward to receiving mine in a couple of weeks' time.
Now you've said it. Now you know what's going to happen now. What I need to know from you, Jules, this year, have I made a grave error in selecting the Lint advent calendar and not picking the calendar available from YouTuber Zoella?
Oh, well, this is just going to be 10 minutes of me laughing continually, I think. There's not going to be a lot of vocal content this week. So for people that, you know, aren't aware of this, and actually, I'm not going to use the "have you been living under a rock," because it is, I would like to think people hadn't heard of this, really, because, again, it makes me really cross. So Zoella, the self-styled YouTuber guru, she has many, many, many millions of followers on the social medias. She is apparently now quite wealthy as well. People turning up to try and look at her house in Brighton, you know, all sorts of, her brother now has a career as well. She's started writing I am inverting that in commas to some extent, I think, but she's now publishing books. So Zoella's decided that she's going to release an advent calendar in conjunction with Boots, because, of course, I don't think Zoella needs to be really DIY anymore, really, does she? And this is part of what sticks in my craw. So she's now doing this advent calendar through Boots. So it's got various things in it. I'm struggling to see it. I've just sort of got a picture here. Things like a candle and a Christmas bauble and some nail varnish and another candle and a mirror and all sorts of, and a cookie cutter and all sorts of things. So there has been some movement in this story since it was first kind of publicised. But the Zoella advent calendar, a mere £50 if you're a teenage child, but inevitably teenage child wishes for a Zoella advent calendar. Of course, a big outcry on this, and not least because various people have made the advent calendars themselves out of things they have bought online and have found the cost to be not anywhere near £50. Particularly, my love goes out to Poundland this week for making their own for £13 and advertising it on social media that you can. And they've called theirs the Advent of Amazing Value at Poundland, which is, you know, I do admire that, I must admit. Zoella's gone on to make a YouTube apology, which is, I think we talked about this before. We're living in the rise of the non-apology, aren't we, really? Usually the non-apology takes the form of, I am sorry if. And if you're adding an I am sorry if in, then that's not really implying that you're that sorry. And it says, you know, I am sorry if you were offended, which, you know, means I'm sorry that it's your problem that you were offended. She has blamed Boots for the price of it and says it's not my fault at all. I'm really upset about this. Aren't Boots wicked? Very much looking forward to any Boots future endorsement deals with Zoella. Suspect they probably won't be coming now. And Boots have halved the price today's yesterday £25. But it just makes me angry. I mean, it just, if I start to unpack how I feel about Zoella, who's made a very handsome living off originally having been a quote-unquote ordinary girl that just happens to blog, who now just happens to be an ordinary girl that is endorsed by products, whose YouTube videos consisted the unboxing of products, encouraging people to buy things. She just makes her living out of consumerism. There was a really good article, Amelia Tate, who writes for the New Statesman. They're kind of they're sort of new media slash kind of, I wouldn't say pop culture, but kind of sort of young, sort of emerging trends writer, I suppose you would say. And she wrote this fantastic piece in the New Statesman a while ago about they had this festival to do with YouTubers, and the idea was that you pay, and the tickets were insane amounts of money, like 150 quid or something absolutely ridiculous. It was called Hello World. I found the article now. It was an event for YouTube fans. It was described as an immersive live experience, and the two-day event was going to be a place where you could see your YouTube heroes in the flesh, enjoy carnival rides, listen to live music, play games. I think we've spoken previously that that teenagers are now really into YouTube. Mm. Me and my mate took my friend's then 13, 14-year-old daughter and her best mate to go and see Dan and Phil at the Brighton Dome, and it was sold out, and everyone had gone out in Halloween sort of makeup. These people went to the Birmingham Genting Arena for Hello World. They paid £171 for three tickets, but it's a lot of money. So they turn up with their kids. He said it became apparent, this chap here says, it became apparent after about 5 minutes there was absolutely nothing to do, he says. He says the advertised carnival rides weren't there, and some stages and sets were completely empty of stars. He says a giant arcade game intended for children to play on was broken. Most kids were sort of running around trying to see these YouTube stars that then moved on somewhere else. Kaylee Jones and her 11-year-old daughter Madeline queued for 2 hours in order to meet Zoella. And they, when they were let in, Zoella actually wasn't there. It was, but one of the worst things about it, and this is where I think these young YouTuber stars are, how can I put this, somewhat tone deaf. The complaint letter from Julian Maunders reads, I will continue to line Zoella's pockets even though she let my daughters down so very badly, which kind of sums up where we are. But one of these kind of young people, Zoella was on stage for 3 minutes, by the way. God. And one of these people got onto the stage a bit tame, Beth. When vlogger Louise Pentland took to the stage, she opened it with a joke. One of the dads paraphrased it like this: "Hi everyone, thanks for coming. I've recently moved, so thank you very much for buying my new house."
Oh.
And this is my enormous problem that I have with this generation of YouTubers that I think initially started off selling themselves as just like the young people that they speak to, you know, that anyone can get a little camera and just do a blog in their bedroom, and you know, you too could be a big star one day. But it's not based around anything to do with talent particularly, I don't think, or it's not based around the idea that, you know, they're musically really talented, or you know, they're very passionately politically engaged, or you know, they have a skill. It just seems to be about the flogging of stuff, and I think that this advent calendar sums it up perfectly. And I, you know, part of me thinks, oh well, I'm glad not to remain relevant with young people if that's what young people are interested in, and that's all well to the good. But I also get angry at the fact that all young people are doing are being exploited to buy stuff and spend money and line Zoella's pockets and buy people's houses, and that is, I think that's wrong. And everything makes me cross this week, and this is no exception.
During the week I picked up a tweet from another YouTuber I'd never heard of called Yasmin. And you mentioned this. She went to the trouble of individually costing each item in Zoella's peculiar 12-item advent calendar. And
which means you might get something any other day anyway.
Exactly. It's a really strange thing to do, to make it 12 days. But anyway, these included, you mentioned cookie cutters. On Amazon, you can get those for 46 pence each. The pen is available on Amazon for 76 pence. The candle is available for 80 pence. So, yeah, you know, you're just paying those, you know, what, 30, 40 quid on the original price tag just for Zoella's name on it. Now, as you said, the thing that really fascinates me about this, and you refer to this, Zoella apologised for this whole palaver, but this is where I draw parallels with the Josh Rivers at Gay Times story, and what I said earlier about these topics being, you know, tales of our times, because as ever these days, and you mentioned this, any faux pas, any criminal activity, anything negative, must produce the tweeted apology, or in the case of Zoella, of course, the YouTube video apology. But in both Zoella and Rivers' cases this week, the apologies, as you mentioned, were coated with a sort of Boris Johnson style of appear to be saying sorry without taking responsibility. Mm. And Zoella, in a terribly patronising video clip...
Oh, God, I mean, that made me just want to break just by itself.
It was just awful. It really did. It literally made me cringe. I kind of felt myself kind of flushing with embarrassment for her, because she blamed it on what she calls the retailer, as you say, Boots.
And yes, well, I'm looking forward to Boots wanting to have nothing to do with her ever again, yes. Frankly. I hope that's an outcome of this.
And Rivers said in a tweet after his demise, "Many of my generation, we're learning so quickly, we're moving so fast." And he said that as if his awful tweets could be explained away by the pace of life. And I'm sure there are plenty of 25 to 35-year-olds.
Well, I would never have dreamt of tweeting anything like that, she says now, hurriedly going back through her Twitter. But no, I'm sure I wouldn't have done. I wasn't hugely racist when I was 24. It's not a part of growing up.
Exactly. You and many others of your age group have managed to get to this point in your lives without trying to take excessive amounts of money from impressionable young people. Nor have you sort of tweeted appalling slurs about, you know, lesbians, Jewish people, bus drivers, whatever.
Yes, particularly the bus drivers.
take responsibility is you know, my sort of feeling on this. Otherwise, it's not an apology. It's a PR initiative.
No, I agree. It's damage limitation, isn't it? It isn't genuine regret. And actually, with all of the apologies that we seem to be living through day to day at the moment, through the fallout of the Harvey Weinstein stuff, the fallout of the political stuff, there are very few apologies that are actually genuine apologies, genuine expressions of regret, genuine kind of... And I think we've talked previously on the podcast, the most genuine apology and... Not just an apology is not just saying sorry. An apology is modifying your behaviour and changing your viewpoint so that you don't do it again in the future. We've talked previously about Naz Shah, the MP for Bradford.
Yes.
And that is the most genuine apology I think I've seen in the last few years, because she had made misguided and ill-judged comments about Israel on her social media a few years beforehand. She is Muslim. There is, I think, well-publicised tensions between the Muslim community and the Jewish community. And actually, her local synagogue went out of their way to say that she had worked with them and they felt she had genuinely sort of changed and moved on and progressed. And her apology, I thought, was a genuine apology, a genuine kind of, "I am sorry, it was wrong for me to do this, I should not have done this, I am sorry." That is an apology for me. And also it's how you behave afterwards, really. And I think in the case of Josh Rivers and Zoella, I would be more inclined to believe their apologies if I felt they were going to change afterwards. And is Zoella suddenly going to stop flogging things to young people? I think not. She's probably got a mortgage on her huge dream castle in Brighton, hasn't she? So, and also, given that Josh Rivers seems to be, "Oh, poor me, oh, I'm still on a journey, I'm still growing," I'm sure he's gonna, maybe he'll kick up an auto trader or something, I don't know. But I you know, let's, and then he'll have to, you know, I know what happened. He'll turn up at Cycling Today, and then 2 weeks later will have to resign after having found tweets threatening to run cyclists over or something. I don't really feel like they're going that they're really progressing or moving on. It's the cynicism, and I think this is my problem with it. It is so cynical, isn't it? This idea that, you know, Zoella's video made me cringe because it was so cynical. It was not a "I'm sorry I've done this." They're always "I'm sorry I got caught" apologies, isn't it? "I'm sorry to my bank manager," and, you know, I have less than, you know, the reason why I don't have any time for Zoella is not that I'm judging young people for watching YouTube videos. I'm judging her for making a living and making pots of money out of flogging stuff to young people and pretending to be something she's not.
Yes, exactly. So, Jules, many listeners will be saying to themselves now, I can hear them at home, in their cars, out walking the dog, I can hear them. They'll be saying to themselves, "You know what? I'd like to hear a lot more of that Juliet." Where might they do so?
Well, they can hear me on the radio this evening. Oh. Saturday Social on Barricade Radio. I do Northern Soul, Motown and Mod. And that is from 6 to 7pm this evening, Saturday the 18th. Yeah, Saturday the 18th. So you can catch me on barricaderadio.com. You can also catch me doing Indie Wonderland next Wednesday. So that's... So that's barricaderadio.com, and that's 8 until 10pm next Wednesday doing indie, alt rock and miscellaneous.
That should satisfy the needs of those pining.
Oh, I'm about this evening as well, actually. If people are down on the South Coast, if they're in the Hastings area, I am DJing at a gig at the Palace in Hastings on Hastings Seafront. There are three bands playing, Ulysses, Les Agamemnon, who are a French surf band, and the Daggerdebs. I'm spinning the platters that matter at the end in aid of my friend Letty's birthday. So if you are around and about then do please come and say hello. Also on Saturday the 25th of November, I will be at the Dragon Bar DJing in Hastings. So who knows when we record. So I just thought I'd give people a chance to plot their diaries.
Splendid opportunities for everyone, I feel, there.
Yeah, very much so.
Thanks very much to you for listening. Our executive producer is Rona.
Indeed, love from the South Coast to the North of Scotland.
And this is simply a gorgeous track to play us out, Jules.
Isn't it lovely? I'm really glad that you love this as much as I do. I think I played this on the radio fairly recently, and I thought it was something else. It came from a Word Now Hear This compilation from many moons ago, and when I put it into my computer, it muddled two of the tracks up, so I played this expecting to be something else, but in fact was not sorry to play this at all, because it is lovely. It's a song that I think it was originally a Steel Eye Span song. It's become a bit of a sort of a folk standard, really, and I am so keen on it, and I'm so keen on this version. This is Nancy Wallace, and the thing that I love about it reminds me of Sandy Denny and of folk singing generally, and my problems with the X Factor and things like that, and this sort of showboating style of singing that comes on those programs. And my dad says to me, why do people sing 10 notes when only one will do? And actually I agree, and I think this is a wonderful way. People think that being a good singer means that you can hit very high notes, or you can sing for very long, or you know, you can kind of emote. And actually I think sometimes good singing is just being able to sing a song. And I think this is someone singing a song, and it is so unshowy, and it is so pure, I think, and it is so just, it really gets to the heart of the matter. I find it incredibly moving, because it is not trying to grab your attention, it just grabs your attention by being, and I think that's lovely. So this is Nancy Wallace, and this is I Live Not Where I Love.
Come all ye maids who live at a distance, many a mile from off your swain, come and assist me this very moment, for to pass away some time, singing sweetly and completely songs of pleasure and of love. My heart is with him altogether, though I live not where I love. When I sleep, I dream about him. When I wake, I find no rest. And every moment locked within his breast, a great distance may prove assistance from my mind, his love to remove. My heart is with him altogether, though I live not where I love. All the world shall be one religion, all living things shall cease to die. If ever I prove false to my jewel, in any way my love deny, the world will change and be most strange if ever I in constant prove.
You have been listening to a DACM Media production.